Let's go.
Welcome to Micromobility, a podcast exploring the disruptive potential of small electric vehicles. We cover the best companies building these amazing new vehicles, as well as topics relevant to how they impact people, cities, and our planet. My name is Oliver Bruce, an investor in mobility and climate tech, and my co-host is Horace Dedieu, founder of Asimco.com and Micromobility Industries.
Hey team, Oliver here. This week, I managed to catch up with Rich Pleath while I was passing through London. Rich is the founder of FinMile, a micromobility-first freight company in London using four-wheeler cargo e-bikes to deliver for companies such as HelloFresh and some very large global companies that unfortunately I can't name, but who I was very impressed with. They are expanding very quickly and I think have a relevant and replicable model for a lot of cities around the world. I'd encourage you in particular to listen to the section where we talked about what the model offers in terms of labor and increasing the throughput of deliveries relative to existing incumbents. So with that, enjoy.
Let's go.
Hello and welcome back to Micromobility. I have with me today Rich Pleath from FinMile. How are you doing today, Rich?
Good. Thanks so much for having me.
It's a pleasure. Look, I feel like this has been a bit of a whirlwind romance for the two of us.
It really has.
I came into London last week. Someone put us together, and I've just really enjoyed getting to know you. It's been fun.
Been absolutely great.
Yeah. Well, look, I feel like what I want to start with is the story of FinMile, kind of where you're at today, because I think that's just a very interesting. You know, like you've done very well in a very short period of time. So maybe take us through when you started, where you've got to now, and then we'll kind of get a bit more into you and that sort of thing.
Absolutely. So I founded Finn in August with my co-founder, Scott Murphy. We were already working on a consulting business in mobility, so focused on everything mobility from ride hailing to electric scooters to logistics. And I phoned Scott one day and I said, hey, I've had this idea. Why don't we try and improve cities? And instead of us consulting, we go and launch a company. And he said, yep, absolutely. Anyway, Scott is from Brooklyn. So he's actually relocated to London for this startup.
Oh, wow.
And anyway, we started fundraising. As you can imagine, horrible environment to start fundraising in last kind of towards the end of last year. We had a lot of calls, you know, hundreds of calls with angels. Managed to persuade a couple of them to invest in us and believe in our vision. We raised about £1 million. We launched a week earlier than planned in January because one of our first clients wanted us to launch earlier. So we took out a lease on a place. We got a number of bikes from our partner Fernhay, and we started delivering parcels, moving stuff around the city. And it's been quite a whirlwind trip from then. You know, we're building this modern network for logistics, and we got a lot of things wrong. We got a few things right, but most of it we got wrong in terms of how long it was going to take us to onboard a customer, how many parcels we'd be delivering in our first few months. Now we're up to kind of tens of thousands a month, but it's, you know, it was a really whirlwind experience.
Totally. And so you've got, can you reveal your numbers on in terms of number of drivers, bikes, all that sort of stuff?
Yeah. So we have around 100 riders.
Yep.
Now we have, about 15 drivers, because we also do the middle mile, picking up from a distribution center and bringing into dense urban environments.
Yes.
And in terms of bikes, we have around 45 at the moment.
Yeah.
We're growing very fast. We will probably be kind of tripling that number over the next few months. Yeah. And the really exciting thing for us is, you know, as we now onboard lots of customers that we've been talking to for a few months, the package numbers are really, really increasing, you know, doubling every week.
So explain the when you say you've got a rider and a bike, because the bikes are not what most people have thought of as bikes, right? Like this is the part that I was kind of blown away with a little bit, with the kind of luggage capacity that you're talking about.
So, you know, a lot of e-cargo companies, they are doing courier businesses, and that's fantastic. Yeah, I think there's everybody in our space is doing really, really fantastic things. And I would never put down anyone who's trying to take, you know, vans away from cities. For us, what we've decided is we need this large capacity because we're a modern logistics network. We're not a courier business taking things from A to B. We are really moving a lot of products, thousands of parcels a day from a distribution center into London and then rotating that. So our cargo bikes with Fernhay, for example, they have a 2 square meter kind of cargo compartment. And so these are 4-wheel cargo bikes. They are just like if you jumped on a Lime bike, they are very heavily e-assisted because you could have 250 kilos in the back. So to get going, there is a small throttle that gets you up to about 3 miles per hour. And then after that, you just start pedaling. The e-assist kicks in and you can pedal around. We have about a 60-mile range on the Fernhays. We obviously don't use that much range, but we have 2 shifts throughout the day. So a bike will come back. We will unload that bike with returns or parcels that have been picked up. And batteries are swapped, and then we put a new rider in, and they go out and enjoy the ride in London, taking vans off the road.
Yeah, epic. And so, okay, I've had Merv Iqbal from Hived on the show. That episode was very well received. I think there were a lot of people who were kind of like blown away with.
Far more impressive than me. We should put that out there.
No comment. The one thing that I would say is that the part that I think everybody found really interesting was that just like what offering a smaller vehicle in the city actually offers in terms of being able to do more stops, being able to do more packages. Can you talk through what that looks like why people find that interesting?
Absolutely. So at the moment in dense urban environments, parcels don't get to their destinations efficiently. So if we say, don't worry, we're going to switch all of those vans you see in the traffic to electric, we're not actually getting rid of any congestion. Mm. We are, in fact, adding more. And we know that urban deliveries are continuing to increase as people switch more and more to e-commerce. So the biggest problem we have is how do we take the reliance off the kind of main roads that are in London? And obviously, in London, we have a thing called low traffic neighborhoods, which we're actually doing this at my house. And I'm sure you've just walked past one where vans, any motor vehicle cannot drive through. So to get into a neighborhood, this is to prevent Waze drivers who are just trying to avoid the main roads where the traffic is. And so this is to prevent that from happening. So if you are using a bike, you can go through all of these neighborhoods. You obviously, you know, you're much safer for any people who are playing on the road, for dogs that are running in the road. Mm. And for us, we looked at what was happening in a city and we decided, for the last 80 years, cities have been designed around motor vehicles. Mm-hmm. We've taken away from green spaces. We've just added more and more roads, and therefore we've added more and more vehicles onto the road. For us, that makes absolutely no sense. We want to make cities livable again. I think Paris is doing a great example of this, where they are introducing a 15-minute city to planting back trees, adding cycle lanes. London is committed to that now. We've seen a tremendous number of cycle lanes pop up. You know, there are more, and TfL have recently, Transport for London have recently announced they will be adding more and more cycle lanes. Now, for us, if we can take traffic, you know, away from the main roads, add more bikes to the cycle lanes, it means we're not adding to the congestion. We can move parcels faster, greener, and cheaper because we are not having to pay for parking. We are not having to pay the congestion zone.
So the not paying the congestion zone and not paying for parking are two of the things that feel like they would reduce the cost, but what increases the speed? Is it like the ability to just be able to zoom? So you can use bike lanes, but you can also use main roads, or not main roads, but you know, you can be on the roads as well. And then you also have the, when you get into the, because I assume it's like the ability to stop and unload, but not have to clog up a city, like clog up. Is that a very significant issue?
That's a big thing. So, I mean, I cycle everywhere. I have I grew up in the Netherlands. I have an old Dutch bike. I cycle everywhere on that. And often, you know, there'll be a van just parked on the cycle lane or on the sidewalk, and you have to swerve around that and go into the main road. For us, you know, that makes no sense. We can park in a safe area, but we don't have to use the road infrastructure. We use the cycling infrastructure as much as possible. If there's a cycling lane, we are in it. And that's a great thing with the Fernhay. It's much thinner than a lot of the other bikes that are out there. Mm-hmm. And so it's not, you can overtake if you need to, if you're another cyclist. But using the cycling infrastructure means we're just not sitting in traffic. So we have some great videos on our LinkedIn page of just our cargo bikes crossing the bridges in London or going down a cycle path. And, you know, a rider is very kindly videoing and just seeing all of the vans that are just sitting there. Your parcels are not moving anywhere. For us, we want parcels to constantly be moving, getting closer to their destination and being dropped off. And so, you know, vans in cities now, they just don't make sense. And we have some interesting stats that I'm sure people will disagree with me on. We think 91% of parcels that are delivered within a city could be delivered by one of our e-cargo bikes, so with a larger capacity. obviously people are still getting large parcels delivered and, you know, you still do need vans for that. But if we could take 91% of vans off the road, just imagine how much extra capacity there would be on the roads in dense urban environments.
Mm. And then for you, obviously, like the reason I think it becomes compelling and part of the reason I've become very enamored with this idea of micromobility enabled freight within cities, and I've had Adam from Eve on as well talking about this, is like you've got a vehicle that's 12,000 to 15,000 pounds, so substantially cheaper than a van, being able to do a higher capacity of deliveries within certain, obviously, very specific zones. Like the part that I really want to hear is that, okay, cool. So if you were to run a standard run with a van and then a standard run with one of the Fernhay bikes that you use, how do they compare?
Yep.
What's the number of deliveries that you can do? What's the cost per delivery that you do?
So sometimes what you have to think is that vans are going out and they may be just a third or a quarter full. So even you have this huge vehicle on the road that is clogging up the streets and it's not even full. With our bikes, we set up micro fulfillment hubs. The bikes can return as many times as they need to through to the hub during a shift.
Mm-hmm.
So if we are filling up with, we deliver for a fantastic coffee company that does subscription coffee. And so we can pick up in our bikes around 300 of those parcels.
Mm-hmm.
We then bring those back to the hub. They're sorted into different riders. We can then fill up with multiple different parcels. So then we get a very dense environment when we're delivering with, you know, we're doing one stop, but we're delivering you, you know, your coffee, maybe a food delivery,
mm-hmm.
Something else that is going on, and another package that you've ordered from a clothing company. So if you're in a van and that van is, you know, coming from a long way away from the distribution center, it usually has a fixed area where it's delivering, but it's not thinking smart that, oh, it's just two roads away, there's another delivery.
Mm-hmm.
But because it's a van, it's very hard to get to that road. For us, our smart algorithms and machine learning can basically say, you know, this is the route we're going on. But instead of two riders doing, you know, there's a street, two streets away, we can reroute the rider so they can actually go and pick up or drop off those parcels that are very, very close by.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all about looking at how many parcels we can put in the bike. Now, obviously, we know the volume of the bikes.
Mm.
We know the sizes of the parcels that we're delivering that day. And so we try and match that, or the system automatically matches that with our routing and puts as many parcels as possible in there. So, you know, if it depends on obviously the size of parcels, a lot of things, but about four bike loads that we do in half a day is about one van load. And right. We can do that with one shift at, you know, and as we open up more micro fulfillment hubs, we'll see that that actually increases even more.
Yeah. And then, so I don't know what the other part that Merva had mentioned, which I thought was a very interesting point, is that the labor that you're able to get to ride the bikes are different from who you'd normally get for a contracted like courier van service, because oftentimes the courier van services, they're owned by the courier. They're in a different kind of category. They're obviously self-employed. They have to charge more because they're running the entire van versus the you guys run these bikes, then you're just employing them. So your cost of labor is differently structured.
That's correct. So obviously I just want to iterate that we do use vans for the middle mile. So we have our own electric vans and our own drivers who are doing that. But obviously we need far fewer of them because all they're doing is picking up from the DC, bringing into our micro fulfillment hubs.
Mm.
Whereas our riders, we have such a large pool. You don't need a driving license.
Mm-hmm.
You have 3 days of bike training when you come. And obviously it's a pass fail. It's not like, oh, you're okay at riding a bike.
Yes.
Obviously, you know, you don't need the balance because it's four wheels. But yes, we have a huge pool of people. We can essentially, we take anybody who's over the age of 18. We put them on a full-time employment contract, but they can also have flexibility. And all of our riders get equity in the company.
Mm.
So over time, they could, you know, it could be life-changing amounts of money. Now, obviously, that is a lot down to how well we can do on the business and the operations and everything. But we want to ensure that our riders feel part of this company as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so not that there is, you know, they just don't care about the parcels they're delivering and the inefficiencies. We want them to care about the company because they're shareholders.
Yeah, I felt that when I met the team. They're very engaged team. Cool. Okay. So you've got, obviously, you've got the bikes out on the road. You're doing this. Like, one stat you'd mentioned was like the amount of frequency that you have on most roads in London. Like, can you talk a little bit about at this point now the amount of coverage that you have within the city?
Yeah, so we deliver in London at the moment, and we are launching in other cities very soon. We deliver anywhere within the M25. Mm-hmm. And essentially, we're going down almost every single street in London every 3 days, which is pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. And obviously, with that, we are with this, we're large scale logistics. And so we don't, you know, we don't own the stock. We're not trying to do 10-minute delivery or 2-hour deliveries. Mm. There's plenty of companies who are doing that. For us, it's now, how do we grow that density? So whenever we add more packages in, it's not really changing our logistics that much because we're already delivering to that area. So it's just more parcels. We can open up more micro-fulfillment hubs and they can return more times during the day. Mm. So it's all about driving the efficiencies.
I do think that that's one thing that micro-mobility first freight does that's very different. I'm trying to think about the other parallels that exist. I know DHL's been looking at doing this. I know DPD's been doing this. Amazon, obviously, they've been exploring this. I'm still waiting to be able to get Alex Vickers on the podcast at some point, who runs the micro-mobility.
Do a shout-out to Alex Vickers.
Yeah, thank you.
Come on the podcast.
Yeah, totally. Well, it came down to, I know Amazon's obviously exploring this area a lot, and I've had private conversations with them. They're very interested in the space, and they look at it not from a, you know, oh, we think this is a green thing. It's just like, no, it just totally makes money. It's like down in downtown areas where it's super dense, we're super constrained with the amount of deliveries our vans can do. So obviously they're getting quite aggressively into it. It's just a case of...
And I mean, so Amazon's like an amazing company, obviously, but they only deliver Amazon parcels.
Yes.
For us, we can deliver everything else. And it's huge there. And I think there are a lot of companies in this space who are logistics companies who are traditional, you know, they're the incumbents, they're traditional van companies. They have maybe taken delivery of 2 or 3e-cargo bikes. They've tested them out. They found actually it's really hard for us to switch our entire model and hire riders and retain those riders. Mm. And so I do think it's very different that it does take this because environmentally there's huge inefficiencies in these other companies that are using diesel vans to deliver in cities. And obviously we're seeing them now switch to more electric. But it's very hard to say we're going to switch our entire fleet to an electric fleet because it would just cost, you know, $1 billion or many billions and they can't afford to do that. But I think that the biggest thing is that we are from the ground up an e-bike cargo company. We just happen to have vans because we have to pick up from DCs.
Yes.
Whereas I think, you know, other companies that have been grown on this, they are now having to try and slot this into their model. And some of it is for PR, so they can put it, you know, on their website. And I know some companies are just like, oh, we have 2 bikes and both of them are on our website, but they're locked away somewhere. So it really is, how do we put this front and center? And regulation is going to be a big thing. Yeah. Mm. How do we try and push people to not drive vans in cities? Now, the congestion zone is exactly the same if you're a car or a van, which doesn't really seem to make sense to a lot of people. In Paris, you know, they're banning vans in the city center. That's an amazing regulatory tailwind. Mm. In Barcelona, they are, you know, taxing a van. I think it's 1.25% of their annualized revenue. So I think Amazon does have the right idea here. They obviously have amazing density. But they now need to look, okay, they don't have micro-fulfillment hubs necessarily in the right areas. They have their big distribution centers, one in Wembley, and they're trialing their one in their London head office.
Obviously. Oh, so they only have, they have very large ones. They don't have any micro-hubs or
they
anything
They have
like
the,
that.
I think it's in the underground car park of their Amazon office in Shoreditch they're operating out of, but I think it's not a huge number of parcels.
Yeah, interesting. Very interesting. So that model, like, I mean, I know that's what Merva was talking about as well with Hive, like, and I can see that we're going towards that. Like, that model obviously makes a lot of sense. You have one thing you bring into a city and then you do the short level distribution. And I hear you as well that there's a need to build the company from this place first rather than trying to retrofit into the incumbent model. Because I think that's in part why I think it's so interesting. It's super disruptive to the traditional freight industry. What has been the reception? Like, who of the folks that you've been getting on, like, one thing that kind of blew me away was some of the customers you told me. I don't know how many of those can be public. So, but like, I do think that the names that you're throwing around, I mean, those are really interesting names.
Yeah. So unfortunately, we can't mention those. But yes, they are super interesting names. They're huge companies. And for us, you know, we want to bring these companies in and we want to have a look how we can get them to net zero immediately. You know, these large companies, they have stakeholders who are pushing them for their sustainability goals. For us, you know, we say we can get you to net zero as soon as you start working with us in our service area, which is huge. Yeah. And we also, obviously, the middle mile is net zero, and then all of the deliveries within our service area. So it's going to these companies, and often it's, you know, getting to the right person. It's me. I'm relentless with emails. So anybody who's listening who's had a number of my emails, I apologize. I use the snooze function a lot. But for us, it is about you know, trying to make cities more livable. And for that, we have to get to the right person at these companies to get them. And there are so many forward-looking, you know, directors of logistics out there, CEOs. But I totally understand that large companies are like turning a very large supertanker. You know, it does take time to do the integration. But I think as we move on into kind of Q3 and Q4 of this year, we are going to see that more people are saying, okay, we need to actually seriously look at how we're going to address our sustainability in our kind of home deliveries or B2B deliveries. And so for us, it just made total sense that we could take the van out of the dense urban areas. We could offer an electric middle mile, which, you know, we're going to be doing in lorries very soon. And my co-founder, Scott, is very excited about the electric lorries part of that, which terrifies me.
Interesting. Like big, so rather than doing vans, you're actually doing lorries because
we need that scale to bring parcels into the city. So it will be electric lorries, which, you know, there's all kinds of issues. You can look at the hydrogen. Hydrogen prices have shot up, so it doesn't make it that cost effective. You know, the range issues that we have, where can we do the charging? And so a part of that, the tech that we're building there is how do we ensure that the routes that we're planning have then super fast chargers for heavy goods vehicles. And, you know, if we're moving, you know, 10,000 parcels a day, it's not really that scalable if we're just doing that in vans. You know, we need to look at these larger scale options.
Yep. And then, you know, so a company obviously is, you've got some companies looking at this. What do you think the biggest selling point for them is? Is it the fact that you can go net zero straight away? Is it the fact that you're, I mean, I don't know how you compete in terms of price. I mean, I'm curious how you look at it.
So when we, you know, we go to a company, we can talk to them and we can punch way above our weight because of the net zero, middle mile, last mile, everything. And all of our energy is sourced sustainably. But we have to come in and compete on price, because let's say that fantastic t-shirt you're wearing today, let's say it's from Zara, if I go to Zara and I say, oh, we can do all of your deliveries, but it's going to cost you £5. And they say, oh, we're already working with a partner and it's £2. And they say, oh, we'll put you at checkout anyway, so you can choose which shipper you want to go to. And that's very common in Europe that you have that. But I think 99.9% of people are going to see the £2 option and just click that rather than paying £5 to have something delivered at net zero. And so it is kind of, we have to compete on price. And that's why I think, you know, if we have regulatory tailwinds, it means the kind of customers are more prepared to pay a little extra for the sustainability angle.
And do you think, I mean, how do you compete when you're, you know, clearly subscale relative to where I think you think you're going to get to? But like, what's your average cost of the, like, is your cost structure actually to the point that you feel competitive with existing companies? Or are you like, no, but you're going to get there in 6 to 12 months, 18 months sort of thing?
How we look at it is, obviously, so we, all of the vehicles that we have, we will own, we lease them, obviously. But we, so none of the riders or drivers, they have to bring their own vehicles to work, which is great because it means, you know, you don't have to go and get a loan or get a lease on a car to come and work for us. And we hire locally. Yeah, we want to make sure that everybody we hire lives in the local area. We're providing amazing jobs. We pay above the London living wage. And obviously, as we said, everyone becomes a shareholder. And so what the main thing that we're looking at there is how do we ensure that we can actually offer it at a competitive price. And so we, you know, a lot of it is kind of market research, figuring out what people might be paying for a particular thing. And yes, on some deliveries, obviously, we don't make as much money as we'd like. But as we add more and more deliveries in, it means the density increases and we actually make a higher margin on all of those deliveries. So let's say we work with a huge company. They don't pay us an amazing amount, but it basically pays for all of our bikes and all of our vehicles. Anything else we add on top of that is just increased margin for us. So it means as we win more customers, that's just increased margin. So if we win a customer that's doing, I don't know, 2 million parcels a year, we already have a customer that's doing 2 million, but we're only making, you know, 15% on that. If we add another 2 million parcels, we could actually make 25% because we're already delivering to that house with their coffee subscription or whatever that may be. Now we're dropping two parcels off to you. And hopefully in the future, you know, we turn up one day and we drop drop four parcels off. And that's our big thing. If you think about, you know, we're sitting in Islington in London, think about a road in Islington. Let's just, for argument's sake, say they get 100 deliveries a day, probably delivered between 40 to 60 vans. Now, that is horrible. Horrible.
To 60 vans on a street of 100.
In a whole day. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
And it's just so inefficient. So what we should be doing is consolidating deliveries. And there are some companies now, and especially when you are doing a new build apartment block, some of the planning applications say that you can only have a certain number of van deliveries per week.
Mm.
So that is a perfect place where we say, look, we can consolidate all your deliveries at our micro hubs.
Totally. Okay. So I actually have a question about this, because I've explored this similar question in Auckland and New Zealand, where there was a kind of consortium that was talked about being formed between like the top five courier companies. And they were going to say, we're going to set up like an internal hub, a sort of a downtown warehouse where everybody could package and then consolidate. But it doesn't seem to be that there's like, that it would work necessarily across a whole bunch of different companies that they would end up. I mean, in some ways, I know that that's what you're trying to build with your warehouses as a platform. The idea of warehousing as a service. How do you get that from scale from like, okay, cool, so it's just you guys to it's 20 companies that are built on your platform? Or and also as well that the existing delivery companies that otherwise would be sending out vans can come and drop off stuff at yours, and then you do that last little mile of delivery and that they work out how to pay you for that. Like, do you think, is that the way that the model is going to go, that you have more cooperation and interplay?
I mean, hope so. You know, we view competition as kind of great companies who are doing things slightly differently, or we can potentially partner with them and help them with that final mile. So if it's, you know, some of the incumbents in the UK, you know, we would love to say, you can just deliver your parcels to us and we will just deliver them in the local area. So your van can do four trips maybe a day from your DC to our micro fulfillment hub, and we'll do the final mile. So instead of you having four vans that are driving around, just have one, pick up from your distribution center, deliver to ours, and we will then do the final mile. Now, that means you can reduce your costs because you only need one van, one driver. And we can reduce all of the environmental impact in terms of congestion, in terms of emissions there. So that is something that we're looking for. But we've learned so much from doing this. And as I said at the beginning, you know, we've made so many mistakes and we got everything basically wrong. And we've now like tried to learn a lot from that. But it is learning from other companies, listening to your amazing podcasts and seeing what other people are doing. But yes, we want to consolidate as many deliveries as possible to try and make cities better.
Totally. I mean, I get that. I'm just trying to work out what the part is. What's the forcing function on making people consolidate? And I think it's a regulatory push.
It's a regulatory thing, yeah.
And I think your point around planning permissions is like correct. It doesn't strike me that any current courier company would say we're willing to trade in four vans for one in order to be able to run. Like, unless it was a...
But they should.
But I agree
they
should.
Money.
I agree it would save them money, but it's also, like, it's not one of those... It seems irrational for them to be able to do that unless it was a regulatory push or unless it was something else. And they'd just say, well, we're going to get out of the last mile stuff. I mean, one thing that I do think that's interesting about London is, like, the new rules, right? So it's like, if you've got a diesel van, £12.50 if you take that thing out.
So it's actually only if it's over 10 years old.
Ah, okay. Right.
So that's the ultra-low emission zone. So... Yeah. Obviously, in 2025, that will change with the congestion charge. So even if you have an electric vehicle, you will be paying the congestion zone fee.
Yes.
You know, for me, I know this is very controversial. I'm sure a lot of people will hate me. I don't. The congestion zone charge should be much, much higher than
this.
It's £25 a day.
Yeah.
It's like, I hate to say this, but it's just too affordable.
Mm.
If you were to increase that so much, people would say, oh, I can't drive into the city. I'm going to get a cargo bike or I'm going to take public transport. And yes, I know there are lots of people out there who need a car to get into work or something, but there are so many good alternatives now.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, there's always going to be exceptions, you know, for people who need the mobility, then there are those exceptions, you can apply for that.
Mm-hmm.
And for people who are in vans, they could get an e-cargo bike. You know, you don't need to drive from miles outside of London into London every day when, you know, you're carrying five tins of paint in the back or whatever that may be. And that may come across as slightly arrogant for someone who lives in London. I think how we should look at it is, you know, we need to reduce congestion. We need to reduce pollution. And Scott is every day, he's like, we are so effed if we don't do something
100%.
For the planet.
Yes.
And it does take things that people will feel uncomfortable about.
Mm. I didn't realize that there was a difference between the ultra low emission zone and the congestion
yes,
zone.
Yes, they, they're actually
two different things. Yes. So you can get pinged on both.
So if you had a car that was over 10 or any vehicle that was over 10 years old, you have to pay the £12.50 and the congestion fee, which I think is £25.
Oh, wow.
Which I think is actually...
And then you're paying for parking when you get into town.
But it's very unfair because obviously the people who... lots of people who do have a car that's older, maybe they can't afford to upgrade.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have to look at, you know, do you need to be driving into a city?
Yes.
But for any kind of a ride-hailing vehicle, mm-hmm. the Transport for London law or mandate is that it has to be under 10 years old anyway.
Yes.
So, you know, the ULEZ is not affecting Uber drivers or Bolt drivers, but it is... you do have to upgrade. But, you know, this is also great for our planet. You don't want to be sitting, you know, when I cycle places and I try and do deliveries, you know, I would love to do them once a week in our bikes, but it's usually now once every 3 weeks or so.
Mm.
And I cycle down some main artery roads. I'm just like, this is just disgusting. The amount of pollution I'm just breathing in right now.
Mm.
And so something has to be done. We can't just say, oh, it's fine. You know, bring in your massive polluting trucks and everything into the city. We do have to say cars and vehicles that were built in the last 10 years are better than if it's a 20-year-old diesel van that's, you know, fuming out black smoke into my lungs.
Totally, totally. So I feel like we've talked about the business. I feel like we've got a pretty good grasp on what you're doing and where you've got to. Curious about, like, the future. Like, what is this? Do you think that we get to a scale where micromobility first freight disrupts the entirety of the freight, like, of the urban freight industry? And where does that make sense for that to happen? Because, I mean, London, totally. London is preposterously dense, by the way. I mean, this is the one thing that I've spent. It's been a week here, and I'm like, goodness me. I mean, this is like, you're really living on top of each other here in a way that I hadn't quite fully comprehended in my previous visits. But, like, it makes sense here where you've got huge amounts of density. But, like, where does that not start to work? Does it work in, like, we get out to small villages or smaller cities? Or, like, at what point does that kind of threshold tip where you don't think micro
so it's a really great point. So if you're looking at rural areas, you know, electric vans are brilliant because they are long distances. You know, you don't have the congestion. So absolutely, electric vehicles are absolutely brilliant when you're looking at these longer distances, because it could be, you know, 10, 20 minutes per drop. And even in you know, within London, we have farmyard animals that are close to the M25 around that area. And so, you know, their electric vans are perfect. And when we are delivering within the North-South Circular, which maybe we can think of as like zones 1 and 2 on the tube, anywhere inside that area, a cargo bike 100% makes sense. Yeah? That's where we should be banning vans. We should say, look, if you're doing deliveries, we're going to tax you, or we are going to charge an extra congestion zone charge. But when you get into rural areas, you know, vans do make total sense. You can't be cycling, you know, 5 miles or 10 miles between drops. And so when we look at a city, it's very much like, you know, Scott and I have both worked in kind of ride-hailing businesses. And whenever we're looking at opening a city, we look at the density, we look at the competition, we look at the number of rides that are being taken, and we look at the kind of prices that are being paid. And the regulatory environment is a big thing there. But for us, it's looking at the density. You know, if you look at a tertiary UK city, you know, the density from London to Birmingham falls dramatically off a cliff from like to like 2,500 per square kilometer. Look at Paris, it's, you know, it's 20,000 per square kilometer. Barcelona, 16,000, for example. So for us, we have to nail London. We have to ensure that we have this huge vision that we want to be taking vans off the road. And I hope people have seen some of our bikes around. You know, we don't have that many out at the moment, but we are about to have a tremendous number of bikes.
I've spotted quite a few out. That was
That's great. We haven't sent me any photos. So I'm disappointed that you haven't done that.
I had other things on my mind. Yes. Fascinating. Okay, so you're thinking like Paris, Barcelona obviously make a lot of sense as the triangle. Where are the other spots that you think make a lot of sense for, like, what are the other tier one cities that have the level of density in Europe?
Yeah, so I mean, like, obviously Amsterdam is an amazing city. It has a large density because it's a very, very small country, but it's not a huge capital city. But really, we're looking at capital cities. But we can also look at other kind of cities that maybe have a, they're less large because they're a small city, but one micro hub could do that. In London, you know, maybe you need 8 micro hubs, but in a smaller city that has maybe, you know, just 1 million people, one micro hub could do that, slightly further journeys potentially, or it's just a very small area. But for us, it's about, we have this huge vision to change cities and to ensure that any parcels, 91% of parcels that are being delivered around the city can be delivered in a cargo e-bike. Now, that's not an urban arrow, unfortunately. You know, these do need to be slightly larger and have, you know, this 2 meter squared capacity ultimately. And it's about delivering as many parcels as possible in these dense areas. But there is a, you know, there is a huge amount of cities in Europe. The cycling infrastructure in London is good. It's getting better. It used to be terrible.
Yes.
The cycling infrastructure in lots of other European cities is significantly better. And so that makes it even easier to go. And, you know, I want to make sure that my riders are safe. You know, every day that's my biggest thing, is making sure that they are safe on the roads and ensuring that, you know, if there is a separated bike path, so it's actually a kind of a barrier or a pavement or like a raised thing in between the road, that is very important.
Totally. Yeah, I don't think I've ever heard anybody come out and make the advocacy claim for cycle lanes, that they should be there as like urban freight delivery lanes.
So the biggest thing is, what you have to think is, if you don't have infrastructure for people, nothing will change.
Yeah? Yes.
But if you do build infrastructure, nothing is going to change overnight. Yeah? You can't say, oh, we spent 10 million on this cycle lane. There's a new one in London on the embankment. We spent 10 million, but no one's using it. Yeah. Now that's silly. People are using it. But it takes time for people to say, oh, actually, I do feel comfortable cycling in London now, because maybe 5 years ago I didn't. It's not something you can just overnight, you say, we've built this very expensive cycle lane, but it's not, you know, more people are not using it suddenly. Things take time. And that's why you build infrastructure and everything will
work. Oh, 100%. I think this is the first time that maybe I'm discussing with Merva too, but like, yeah, the idea that if you, for example, put the infrastructure in place, that you can say there's a viable business that's like immediately going to start using those lanes as soon as they start getting built, you know? Whereas I don't think a lot of cities that is the case. And so what oftentimes people see is like these cycle lanes get built and they may be used by commuters. Whereas I think it's the idea that there's something quite interesting about the idea of all of a sudden the lanes get built and then you see a whole bunch of like minivans going down them. And it's like, oh, that's kind of cool. That is very interesting.
But I also think that one of the things that we're looking at now is, you know, we're a very small fleet at the moment, but as we get larger and larger, we don't want to clog up the cycle lanes during rush hour either. So we're very focused on making sure that, you know, between 8 and kind of 9:30, that we're not sending a tremendous number of vehicles out onto the cycle lanes. Yeah. So, because we don't want to, you know, clog up cycle lanes either. We want to make sure that in less busy periods, we can be using it. Now, all our parcels are already in the city because we use the vans come in during the night. So we're not adding to the congestion there. Obviously, we have to move stuff around, but it's very few vans that we're doing that during the day. But we want to make sure that we are conscientious citizens when we have bikes. Now, there's an email address on all the back end side of our bikes. If anyone sees it, we get emails. You know, if someone has maybe not cycled appropriately, we deal with that immediately. We take them off the road. We do further training. And we have a strike policy, you know, but because they're all shareholders in our company, they want to ensure they're putting a great image forward for the company and maintain this job and deliver great service to our customers, because we have to prove ourselves every day. Yeah. We have to ensure that our parcels are getting delivered on time. If we, you know, we're judged on our last delivery and we take it so seriously, that thing between this amazing brand that's been built over maybe hundreds of years or 100 years, we are the point of delivery to the customer. And so we take that extremely seriously. And that is training our riders in exactly kind of what parcels they're delivering. If they're delivering a cake, maybe it's, you know, it's a congratulations. If they're delivering medical equipment, it's not a, you know, maybe not a such a happy delivery. And so we have on the inside of all of our bikes, we have kind of which parcels we're delivering on a particular day. And it says kind of the delivery process of what they should do. And that ensures they're giving a really great customer service. And, you know, we want to make sure that that is fed back. And we give spot bonuses for people, not on speed or the number of parcels you're delivering, but on the service. So if we get a really positive bit of feedback, like, and you review your delivery that it was 5 stars, that is great feedback for us. And we run, you know, we try and have a lot of fun with our riders. And you've obviously met some of our riders. We run competitions. So it's like, hey, take a great photo this week of your bike out and about somewhere. Take a video. And we've had amazing videos where someone's been on the Mall and they've been stopped by the police because horse guards are riding by and on their horses. And so we've got these amazing videos of our bikes being like stopped in the middle of the road and then the horses going past. And I think we've even had King Charles go past in his carriage one day.
Oh, right.
So I think it's, you know, it is about engagement. We have to make sure. And the larger we get, you know, we're going to have hundreds and hundreds of riders and drivers this year, in the next couple of months. You know, Scott and I have split responsibilities. I trust Scott implicitly. And I think I said this before, you know, Scott and I are friends first and we're business partners second. And Scott spends so much time engaging with our riders to make sure that they're happy. If they anything is wrong, we make sure we go out and we fix that. And so for us, it's spending time with them. We're always available. So we're always in the hub. We're on the WhatsApp groups. We chat with them. You know, if we celebrate their wins, we really care. You know, if it's bad weather, like this morning, it was thunder and lightning in London, pretty standard for June, unfortunately. I messaged them and said, hey, guys, like make extra care today. And that's also a very important thing that I don't think we've talked about. All of our bikes are these larger bikes. Yeah. So they all have roofs and windscreens. I wouldn't really want to go out if it's pouring, like literally pouring with rain, and just get soaked on a day delivering. And I think that would put me off getting a job as a rider. Whereas all of our vehicles have roofs and windscreens. Yeah. And so I think that's quite important.
It is. It is for sure. I want to talk a little bit more about the company and so you obviously started, you're doing a fundraiser at the moment, but like it's a tough time to be fundraising for anything.
Yes.
Especially anything related to hardware. People kind of look at this and, you know, I've got friends of mine who are in BC and I think the feedback from them whenever they look at this, they're like, oh, look, this is one of these wonderful businesses that I can see is going to do really well. And it's not venture backable because of this, which is really comes down to like, you know, it's defensibility of margin over time. It's do you own anything specific in the tech stack, all that sort of stuff. But it's like, no, but there's all these amazing operational benefits that you can get where you just run a really good business, which doesn't seem to be super well paired for a lot of the VC capital. And I'm super curious for you about like what that journey's been like. You obviously raised from angels in the beginning. Who's finding that interesting so far?
I think that the big thing there is, you know, someone, you say last mile delivery and they're like, oh, 10 minute delivery, we are not touching that space. So it's making that difference that we are a large scale logistics company. We don't own stock. We don't move stock instantly to people's houses. We are, you know, moving things from a DC to our hub and then to a customer, but not in a, you know, in 10 minutes. And I mean, the real hero here is my wife, who puts up with all of the rubbish that I have to go through every day. And you know, she is my biggest support that I go back and I feed back to her that these investors, you know, they just said they just weren't interested or whatever it was. Yeah. And the biggest thing is that you have to find the right investor. Yeah. And it's, I always consider this, it's like going on a date. Yeah. You have to kiss a lot of frogs. You swipe a lot on Tinder to find that match. And you find someone, you go on a date, it doesn't work out. You find someone else, you go on a few dates, and then you're like, actually, not for us. And so it's a very, very difficult process. And fundraising is very inefficient. Yeah. Like everybody will tell you that. It's very hard. People who say it was easy, they either got extremely lucky with timing or they look back on it and they've really forgotten what the process was like at the time. And you know, Scott was so fed up of doing investment meetings and we split our responsibilities. He's COO. I try and focus on new business and kind of the strategy and then fundraising. And so yes, it's very challenging. This round, we've been super fortunate. We've spoken to some amazing VCs and they've really liked our vision, our enthusiasm and kind of the contracts that we've won so far. And so we are progressing ahead there. But I think it's a very, very hard time to raise still, as we all will recognize. You have to just be relentless going out there. You have to talk to everybody. You have to have good traction. If you don't have good traction, like people will say, you know, why are we going to risk our money to this? And there's no easy way to put it. You know, it's being relentless. It is talking to everybody and finding that right partner. And the one thing that I find quite annoying is you find that partner and then suddenly you tell everyone that you've got a lead investor or you've got this partner and they're like, oh yeah, we want to come in as well. And they said, well, you know, 3 weeks ago, you didn't even want to know who I was. And suddenly now, because someone else has verified this, you have a line of people. And it's just like everybody loves to queue, especially the British.
Obviously. Yes. The part though that I don't think you answered in that answer, thank you for what you said, but the one part that I don't think you answered, it was like, what is a good match for businesses like this? Because I think one of the things that I look at, right, is that in general, micromobility, obviously we had the huge boom, VC funded during the bubble for the shared. We've then subsequently had even like a VC bubble for owned with Cowboy and Van Moof getting a lot of funding. And there's hangovers from all of those. Like I totally understand that. And like one of my things is I talk to a lot of investors who look at micromobility and they say, one, they still think it's shared. They don't know. They don't even recognize that there might be other vehicles. And two, even for businesses that are really, really solid, like subscription businesses that you see that are growing 30% quarter on quarter, really nice margins. You know, you'd think you think, yep, that's pretty defensible for a very long term. You're growing into a huge market. I feel like you're in the same boat. You've got a very interesting defensible operational business that you're going to be growing into. You're asymmetrically disrupting the incumbent freight delivery or urban logistics firms within of London. And yet it's hard to go out and convince, like, what is the good capital that you think understands that story and is a good match for what you're trying to do in terms of your growth patterns?
So it is like ideally a strategic who understands logistics in some sense. You know, these ESG funds, they're more interested in how you can take carbon out of the environment. So it is going out to specific logistics funds and saying, look, this is what we're doing. And they say, oh, yeah, we've looked at five companies in the space. And it's saying, we're doing it differently. This is what we are doing. And this is why we are doing it. And then we show them the traction that we have.
Mm.
And, you know, if I can't convince you after that, we're not the right partners. Yeah. But it is identifying these funds that are correct for you. And so, you know, I think if you go out and you're just like, you're not looking for a blonde guy to date, you're probably not going to date me anyway. Mm. So, and I think if you're not looking, you're like, we find last mile delivery interesting. We haven't made a bet on this space yet.
Mm.
It's a conversation. They will go out and obviously talk to lots of other last mile logistics companies. You have to be performing better. You have to ensure that they believe in the enthusiasm, the founding team and the vision. And our vision is that, you know, we see ourselves one day being, you know, the future FedEx or the future kind of DHL. We are disrupting this industry from the ground up for the kind of, you know, the 21st century.
Mm.
And it's finding those right partners. And it is very difficult. You know, if anybody out there who's fundraising, I have enormous amounts of admiration for you. And, you know, it's just like every day is up and down. Yeah. Like I just hope I can start on a high and throughout the day it's up and down. And then I just hope I can end on a high. And, you know, I try to celebrate all my kind of failures. I try to celebrate all my wins. And as you know, I had bowel cancer a number of years ago. And, you know, I've really changed my life since then. And my wife is my biggest support, but I celebrate my failures with her. I celebrate my wins with her. And, you know, Scott and I will phone each other and just complain about something because I will be like, oh, this person said X, Y, Z, they don't want to work with us or whatever it is. And it is just, I have huge admiration for everyone out there who's fundraising because, you know, you out there, even if no one else thinks this idea is fantastic, you obviously have believed in this idea. You spent
hours and hours. Dedicated your life to it.
It's just such a tough environment to go and raise it. And I have, you know, for us, it's hard. It's not easy.
Mm.
I just, you know, I lots of people tell me that, like, oh, term sheets were being thrown at us. And I'm like, how did that happen?
Yes. Yeah. Different, maybe a different time.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
Or I'm horrible at fundraising.
No, as well. I think you're relatively compelling. Cool. Well, look, I'm very conscious of time and unfortunately I do need to scoot because I've got something else I need to run to. So I just want to say thank you. This has been a really interesting chat. I think there's a lot of people who are following this space very closely. And so I'm really looking forward to hearing the feedback on you and your story and what you're trying to do in London and hopefully a little bit further afield into Europe. And just wish you all the best with the raise. And yeah. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Yeah. If you want to find out more about us, have a look at our LinkedIn page. Obviously follow me, add me. You can message me. I'll answer any questions that anyone have, but really appreciate the time.
Not at all.